There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live back at the Elder Dragon Journal podcast. This is your host, Igor. As always with me is my co-host, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hello.
We are still the first, the only, and the best creation podcast ever, at least EDH-wise. And we're back. What's up, Niksha?
You blanked out for a moment.
At which part did I blank out?
You were saying, so how are you, Niksha? How was... And then it was like, punk.
How was your week?
It was fine. Did some, played some modern, had some fun.
Didn't play any cube?
Didn't play any cube because of somebody cast Torrential Gear Hulk and...
It rained. To give the listeners an idea how much it rained, we were like 10 minutes of walk until Andra's place, and we couldn't have done the walk because it was raining so goddamn much.
It was raining so much that when the tram doors opened, people were like, yeah, no.
Nope.
Like, no, it was the final station and nobody left.
Because, no thank you, sir. There was no taxis to be called because either they were either A, overbooked or just, no, we just don't wanna.
It was probably the part where they just didn't want to.
And then it stopped raining and we started walking and then it started raining again. And then we're like, no way, we're not doing this.
Yeah, let's not do this.
So yeah, that was sad.
But, I mean, there was still magic to be played outside of that.
Yeah, we played some magics. We even did some other things outside of magic, and that is next year we finally played the sacrifice.
Yeah.
For uninitiated in Warframe, they have released a new cinematic quest called the Sacrifice. And it was kind of mind-blowing.
I mean, once I've played through the second dream, like mm-hmm. The second dream was like a revolutionary part of their game, and that was completely mind blowing.
Still the best quest.
It is just because of the whole novelty part of it, but mm-hmm. This one, it's like it ends. Actually, I'm not gonna talk about it.
But this one is much stronger on an emotional level.
Yeah, you get to know some people, and some people and you way, didn't want to know.
Definitely, that dick. But what I was gonna say, if listeners, if you actually, you know, play Warframe, please contact us, we wanna play with you guys. Cause Warframe! But anywho, let's get back to Magic next year.
Sure.
Any commanders of the week?
Just the usual, the KNT and Scarecrows. But I do want to talk about my modern experience.
Yeah.
So I play, we had an FNM modern, so not a part of that league. So just to go ahead and test the waters, I played Blue Steel for the first time. And it was surprisingly successful. I went 3 wins and then an intentional draw in the last round. And then we played for, you know, who picks first or something like that. And I actually lost, but okay.
Womp womp.
But the deck is a lot more resilient than I thought at first. I always thought that, like, if I don't draw Grand Architect, what am I doing with my life? Turns out that that's not always the case. I mean, you can always hardcast your Wormcoil Engines.
Wait, what?
You can always just, you know, equip your Artificer's Familiar with a sword and hit people. That works.
Sounds impossible.
But yeah, the deck is actually fun, interesting, and it's, you know, my kind of deck. Turn 3 Wormcoil Engines is pretty good. I like doing that.
Really? Sounds like you just want to play Tron in something that's not a Tron.
No. Shut up. Also, Traxxus is very good in the deck.
He's even being played in Vintage, Niksha.
So Traxxus is quite cool. because you can turn him blue, and then you can pay for multiple cards with him because he gets to untap. And unfortunately, I did not have the chance to play Weatherlight.
Womp womp.
I mean, I wanted to. I attempted to cast Weatherlight, and it was quite swiftly countered because against a control deck, you don't want Weatherlight to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want it ever, like anywhere near you.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so that's a deck I'll be exploring further and probably developing a bit more. Maybe take it to some unknown direction.
Womp womp womp.
So, Igor, how about you? Did you get to play some EDH?
I did, but nothing that out of the ordinary happened. But I did buy one booster of Battlebond and one Spellbook Jace. And that is fun because in the Spellbook Jace I opened it is all the normal things and foiled the Mystical Tutor. I was like, sweet!
Yep, Mystical Tutor is one of the better things to get in foil.
Yep, and what's better than that? Brainstorm or...?
Yeah, Brainstorm is pretty cool. I'd say Counterspell is really nice.
I mean, money-wise.
I think that
Brainstorm beats it.
It might, yeah. But still, Mystical Tutor is like, it's a Mystical Tutor.
I was really happy with that. Yeah. And I opened the Battlebond booster, and one of the rare was that wizard that comes into play and searches for instant or sorcery with mana cost 2 or less.
Oh, that's very cool.
I opened that, I put it in the rev, and I actually managed to play it. You know that Kithkin wizard that bounces a creature?
Yeah.
I managed to abuse the living hell out of that.
Oh, yeah.
First thing I got, Counterspell. Then I got Cyclonic Rift, and then just another thing, and another, and another.
Of course. What else to get except Cyclonic Rift and Counterspell?
I mean, if I had any more actual attacks and things, or, you know, if I had the spare Source to Plowshares and Path to Exile, I would be getting those, but I didn't, so...
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, basically that was my, let's say, Commander of the Week. Not really Commander, but what are we going to do? It's Titan with Commander. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some Core 19 spoilers coming right up, don't we?
Yeah, M19 seems interesting, let's say.
Surprisingly good, actually.
Yeah.
Cool reprints and some really needed reprints. Cool new cards.
And some not so cool cards, but their cards... Technically, they're cards.
They're definitely cards printed in Magic the Gathering the game.
In a core set, and part of the core set, not the Planeswalker deck.
What's the first card I want to talk about?
My god. Well, let's talk about the Biobox promo first. So,
oh yeah, it's been causing a lot of stirring lately.
So the Biobox promo is Nexus of Fate. So for 5 and double blue, instant, take an extra turn after this one, and... get this, you don't exile it. Instead, if Nexus of Fate would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and shuffle it into its owner's library instead.
Yeah.
Let me just emphasize the fact that it's a 7 mana, take an extra turn after this one, instant.
The Sun Speaker and Moon whatever or whatever the hell thing from Dominaria, they were no okay Biobox promo, nothing too fancy, but this is a bit stronger. Mostly because it's not Boros, so it can actually be strong.
Yeah, and it's not a legendary, so you can, you know, play it anywhere.
Yeah, but this is a really cool card. And you can actually have infinite turns with this and not lose the game.
Yep, just like with Bacon of Tomorrows.
Ah, Bacon.
So why is it causing a lot of ruckus?
Because people are like, oh my god, if Biobox promos continue to be like this, they're going to be so worth so much money and all those things. Believe it or not, Magic the Gathering players are bitching about things.
Oh, yeah, because they're not receiving $100 bills in their posters.
Even if they were, they would still complain.
Yeah, well, why aren't these $200 bills?
Basically. I'm not sure how I feel about this, because, you know, they might actually start printing better cards, and then you actually have to buy a box. Or shell out a huge amount of money for, you know, the good card. But currently, this is alright.
I mean, they did say that if Biobox promos are in, like, a huge demand, they will find a way to put them in, I don't know, they will find a way to put them into players' hands.
I just didn't like one thing that they said. That was that Sense Speaker pushed the sales of Dominaria boxes. No, they didn't. Dominaria being a stupidly good set did.
Yeah, I think that that was a big part of it.
Yeah, even if Sense Speaker wasn't in the set, Dominaria would still sell like hotcakes because it's a really, really good set to draft, to open, to play cards with, you know.
I mean, but still, having buy a box promos is... It's really, it looks really polarizing, but I think it's a good thing because, you know, stores will get more sales, which is a good thing. You know, when your local game store gets more sales, that's, you know, good for the long-term health of your game and your community.
Yep.
People that buy boxes have like, oh, look, I already got a, like 10 packs of value just by with this one card. You know, guaranteed value, and I mean, if enough boxes are made, printed, and shipped, eventually there will be enough of the BioBox promos for, you know, people who actually need them.
Yeah, I don't mind, you know, this being a thing, because it does help LGSs. I'm just being cautious for the future.
We'll see. I mean, they will learn their lesson at some point.
This sounds ominous.
If they make stupidly powerful BioBox promos, that's going to be bad.
They're going to get a touch of backlash.
That's going to be, like, really bad for the game, and they'll have to compensate that. And then they'll get back to making, you know, the Fire Song and Sun Speakers type of cards. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad. They're kind of popular.
But they're not, you know, stupidly good.
Yeah. They're not, like, you have to have them. I mean, yeah. you don't have to have Nexus of Fate, but it's a cool card to have.
It's a cool card, but the rule is still not collapsing, is what we're saying.
Yeah, except when I start playing Mono Blue Tron, then they'll see.
Sure, let's go with that.
Yep. Back to the actual set.
Back to the actual set. That you can actually open your boosters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Ajani?
It's a Planeswalker, so yeah, sure.
Yeah, Ajani, Adversary of Tyrants. Cool title, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
2 and a white for a 4 loyalty Planeswalker. +1, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. -2, return target creature card with mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, which is a fact I like. And -7, you get an emblem with. At the beginning of your end step, create 3/+1/+1 white cat creature tokens with lifelink. He's cool.
I mean, the +1 is, whatever.
+1 is okay.
It does. His +1 works nicely with his -2. Because you can get persist guys.
Oh, yeah. Like maybe, you know, Murderous Redcap?
Sure, so...
Oh, crap, you could actually do that.
So you're saying that Ajani is a good stacks Planeswalker?
No. I mean, if you can keep a Planeswalker in a stack situation, that's actually really good because most stacks cards don't care about Planeswalkers.
That is true.
And you saw it at the Cube Rat.
Mm-hmm.
Tanglewire, I have Planeswalkers out. Hooray!
But his emblem is very underwhelming, though.
It's basically a +1 of Elspeth.
Yeah.
The 6 mana one. On the other hand, you didn't take that long to get to the ultimate.
And it's just a 4 mana Planeswalker.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's decent.
He's decent, not commander back-breaking worthy, but you know, he's an okay guy.
Yeah, here and there value guy.
Mm-hmm. And if you have someone who cares about +1/+1 counters, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Wanna talk about the Green Planeswalker? Because she's kinda cool. Not, again, stupid, but she's fun.
So, Vivian Reed is a 3 and a double green for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker. For +1, you look at the top 4 cards of your library, you may reveal a creature or land, and put it into your hand, put the rest in the bottom. -3, you destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. And -8, you have an emblem with your creatures. Creatures you control have +2/+2, vigilance, trample, and indestructible.
She's kind of okay.
Mm.
Basically, like one comment says on the side, an entire sideboard in one card.
Yeah.
Do you need win condition? She can get you that. Do you need removal? She can get you that.
The thing I like about her is that she... really isn't that strong. And that might, you know, people will be like, I can't play this in standard. It's not playable in modern. It's not that exciting in commander, which means low prices. You know what that means? It's the perfect planeswalker for my mono green Tron.
Of course it is.
Because it actually does almost everything I need. So it destroys Dizegate, artifact, the enchantment, or creature with flying. I hate flyers, so there you go.
Also Blood Moon?
Yes. And for +1 you get a better question mark? Yeah, a better Ancient Stirrings.
Mm-hmm. Because you can get also Wall or something like that in your deck.
Yeah, colored creatures.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that Reduke finally got a card of his own.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like, you know, a stormy strategy that he usually likes, but who am I to judge?
Mm-hmm.
Next we have actually a really good reprint, and that's Omniscience, aka Omniscience. Thing that Nyxia used to play a lot during the Ravnica days.
Mm-hmm.
Return to Ravnica, to be exact.
Yeah, it was really fun drawing my whole library for free.
Yeah, you won't be able to do that now, but still, Omniscience is a
good
card.
But I'll do something! Oh god, you just reminded me that Omniscience will be in standard.
Yeah.
Oh.
Time to do things. But yeah, Omniscience is good if you can cheat it out. Or what I used to do in my old Teferi deck, the mono blue planeswalker one, is ramp like a motherfucker to it. Oh look, turn 5 Omniscience. Let's see what we can do now.
Okay, speculation time. So, one of the reprints is Scapeshift,
mm-hmm.
which is actually also a really needed reprint.
Really needed.
And they haven't really spoiled any lands from the set. So, you know,
Omniscience.
There's, you know, this, there are 3 blue, and what other number? 7?
7.
What gives 7 mana?
On lands.
They do. Oh, another thing. Alpine Moon is a new card in this set. So it's a 1 red enchantment that says as it enters the battlefield, choose a non-basic land card name. Lands your opponents control with the chosen name lose all land types and abilities, and they gain tap to add 1 mana of any color.
You know how I'm usually hyped about the Blood Moon effects?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much hype about this one.
Yeah, because it names 1 card, so whatever.
Yeah. For me, it doesn't do anything. For people who want to hate out Tron, this is a thing.
Yeah, I was talking to my friends. This is a efficient Tron hate because, you know, Tron lands don't check the name of the land. They check the type of the land.
Yep.
That's why Urza lands have that land type. And
Urza's.
That Urza's land type. Urza's Tower, Urza's Mine, blah, 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 blah. But the older versions don't. But that was errated to be relevant.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does hate Tron. And no, your mine and power plant won't give you 2 mana if you have tower, because that tower isn't Urza's Tower. It's called Urza's Tower.
But it's not type Urza's.
But it doesn't have the type Urza's Tower. So yeah, it hates Tron, but... And that thing about... Yeah, but then that land actually gives you access to your, like, removal, enchantment removal. Blood Moon costs 2 and a color, and a red. This one costs 1 red, so you can use that 2 that you left over for, you know, counter spells, I guess.
Or you just play, you know, all the Blood Moon effects, so they have to remove 1, but, you know, there's still a bunch of others.
And, you know, I'm completely unfazed by this card.
Yeah, because Tron is a really resilient deck.
Not just that it's a resilient deck, it's that I actually prefer if people play this against me, then I have green mana to fuel my walls.
Yep.
So there we go.
You really think outside all the boxes.
So you see, Alpine Moon is another way of saying, yeah, there will be Tron. There's also other elements that say that there will be Tron in this set, but we'll get to them.
You mentioned Scapeshift. Bone Dragon is a bit meh in my mind.
It's irrelevant.
Open the Graves is nice. So open the graves for 3 and a black, it's an enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Nothing spectacular, but real nice.
I like the Ooze Genesis or something like that a lot better because it's incremental growth.
Yeah.
And it's also non-token, so this is strictly worse.
But it's in black.
But it's in black.
And you can play this with zombies and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so an actually exciting card is Resplendent Angel.
Good job.
I did a thing. 1 and white for a 3/3 flying angel. At the beginning of each end step, if you gained 5 or more life this turn, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying and vigilance. And for 3 and triple white, until end of turn, Resplendent Angel gets +2/+2 and gains lifelink. So, this is for all those life gain decks like Karlov or something like that, right?
Basically that, Lazy Loro and stuff.
It's...
You can actually win the game!
Yeah, for the first time, I mean, not the first time ever, but hey, your useless life gaining becomes useful life gaining.
I still prefer the life cannon, useless life gain.
That is a pretty good use of your life.
And of course, the best usage is to just shoot everybody's creatures down, being like, I can kill you all, but I will not, for now.
Yeah, one of the best life sinks is that demon from Kamigawa. You pay 1 life and give something -1/-1.
Kuro Pitlord.
Kuro Pitlord, yeah. He's great.
But yeah, Resplendent Angel is kind of nice. And also the art is stupidly good because it's a Vulcan bug and he just makes stupidly good art.
And it's a 3-mana 3/3 flying.
Yeah, that's a surprising thing because angels usually are not these statistics.
Yeah, the best statistic is the 2-mana 3/3 flying vigilance, and that can't be played on your first, second, or third turn.
But if you have certain vials, you know, you don't care.
Or a way to actually flash in creatures because it says your turns?
Yep.
But, okay, so it's a decent card for life gain decks.
Yeah, you know what's a card I want to talk about, but it's not in this part, but much lower?
Go on.
So, my dear, dear sexy heart is beating with joy when I see Crucible of Worlds being reprinted.
Oh, yeah.
Three generic mana, artifact, you may play land cards from your graveyard. And that's it. Simple text, but also beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because A, it gets people out of, stack situations because they can get their lands back. Or it enables me to play my land destruction titled lands turn after turn after turn after turn.
Or it allows you to get back your Tron lands in standard after they killed them.
Sure, let's go with that. Let's ignore me being happy about, you know. Also, why does one of the planets on the art look like it has an anus?
It always looked like.
I just noticed it now, so I'm like,
I mean, that's, it's kinda, Phyrexia. What else did you expect it to have?
I usually don't connect Phyrexia and, you know, gaping assholes. But...
Well, there you go.
Today's a new day, and I guess I'm a new person now, so... But yeah, Crucible is being repeated, and the price is going to drop a lot. So I'm actually getting like one or two of these.
Speaking of reprints, a friend of mine told me a Mentor reprint. I was like, what? Where? Where? And it was Mentor of the Meek. Oh, wow.
Oh, the card that's been reprinted like bajillion times.
So yeah, Mentor of the Meek is, it's a card, yeah, sure.
It's a good card. But nothing to be excited about.
But you it's not Monastery Mentor.
Wanna hear a card that I'm kinda excited about? A Contrite Cleric. 1 and a white, creature cleric spirit, flying, 2/1, and sacrifice Contrite Cleric, exile all cards from target player's graveyard.
This is like the Karador's dream card in a Karador mirror.
Also, Alesha's dream card in Alesha mirror.
You mean Alesha's dream card in a game? Just
basically,
any game?
Yes. Yeah. It's a flyer, so you can smack people and carry jitters and stuff. And you can also, you know, screw graveyard strategies.
And it's reanimatable, it's tutorable, mm-hmm. it's like the perfect card.
This is the card to be excited about for Alesha decks. Unlike, you know, the card I was excited about, but then I got really sad.
Yeah.
Because the Bugle guy, it's a good card, but not when you have both recruiters in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, real deal.
What about Dark Dweller Oracle? Is that an Alesha card or a Blood Pod card?
No. But you know what that card is? First read what it does.
So, Dark Dweller Oracle is a 1 and a red 2/2 Goblin Shaman. For 1, you sacrifice a creature, you exile the top card of your library, and you may play that card this turn.
For Alesha or Bloodpod, no, because we already have good sources of card advantage and good sack outlets. But Goblin decks, they can really abuse this. Because Krenko, one of the things where he fell was when he couldn't find, you know, actuals, you know, things he needed.
Mm-hmm.
This way you can sacrifice things or, you know, sacrifice Krenko if you really need and get to the things you really want.
What you really, the things you really, really want.
Could you tell me what they are?
So moving on. Dark Dweller Oracle is a, it's that new red card advantage and it fits so well.
It's Abbot of Carekeep, but with a bit more words attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
What's next you want to talk about besides the Death Baron we already talked about, right?
No, but hey, Death Baron reprint. Hooray.
Yeah, basically
Death finally, Baron it won't be a bajillion dollars anymore.
It's a stupid amount of dollars, for fuck's sake.
Yes, now it will be like literal pennies.
I'm okay with that.
Because the only reason Death Baron was so damn expensive is because it was in a small set.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't opened a lot and was never reprinted.
Want to talk about the balance card?
What balance card?
A Demon of Catastrophes.
Oh.
For 2 and a black, it's a 6/6. And it's flying trample, but it needs to have a downside because it's a demon, right?
Mm-hmm.
As an addition cost to cast this creature, to get this spell, sacrifice a creature.
Oh no.
Whatever will I do?
Whatever will I sacrifice? It's a it's like a 4 mana 6/6 flying trample, but I have to lose a creature.
I would be, you know, it would be perfectly normal if you lost a creature each turn, but no, just, you know, hi.
A one-time payment.
Yeah, for 6/6. Abyssal Persecutor was a 6/6 for 4 mana.
With flying
and trample.
Desecration Demon was a 4 mana 6/6 with flying.
Yeah, but he was a bit more easily manageable. This guy's just, yeah, I'm just, you know, 6/6. That's it.
4 mana 6/6 flying trample. Hello, guys.
You can't tap me normally or anything like that.
So and he'll also he's here to beat face.
He will also be a game name promo, right?
Yeah.
Sweet. What card do you want to talk about next?
I'm looking. Oh. Look at this beautiful hate that I'm seeing. Another hate card.
Reckoning.
Infernal Reckoning. So it's a 1 black, instant, exile target colorless creature, you gain life equal to its power. That's a nice worm coil engine you got there. Thanks for the 6 life, by the way.
Also, that's a nice, Argon Ravager you got there.
I mean, it doesn't really do anything against it, but okay.
You don't care for life gain, you just care to pop them at the moment that they don't want to pop the Ravager.
Yeah, but there's a lot of better ways to do that.
There is, but I'm saying the Tron isn't the only casualty in this.
I mean, Eldrazi Tron is another casualty. I can't really think of anything else. A Blue Steel, I guess?
Oh no!
But yeah, they did go deep with this colorless creature hate.
Nah, it's fine.
I mean, this is another one of those cards. So this also shows that there might be some indication of Tron being reprinted.
Worm Coil Engine reprinted.
I would really hope so.
I would. Would you though? Because you would have to go get, you know, another version of Worm Coil. I know you hate getting those.
I mean, then I'll have what, 7 Worm Coil Engines?
You sing like it's a problem.
It's really not.
I mean, you have a problem, but you sing like it's a problem.
But my problem isn't the problem. Shut up. Yep. I don't need intervention.
We talked about the giant dinosaur, right? Last week? I think we did.
Yeah. Another thing about Infernal Reckoning, I forgot.
Obnixilus, maybe? Being on the art?
If that's whatever. Him. Whatever. No, it was something about, I countered the hate meta before it appeared. I included the Lightning Greaves in my deck.
Wow. What an innovator.
Yeah, now let's see you Infernal Reckoning my 12/12 hasting, Ulamog. Oh, and Emrakuls are now better because you can't get rid of them with Infernal Reckoning.
Haha.
So take that, haters. Stop hating.
Wanted to talk about the legendary bear.
Oh, the legendary bear. Yeah, go ahead.
So, Goreclaw, Terror Qual Sisma. For 3 and a green, it's a 4-3 bear, but it's supposed to be 2-2 for 2 mana, what the hell. Legendary creature bear. Creature spells you cast with power 4 or greater cost 2 generic less to cast. Whenever Goreclaw, Terror Qual Sisma attacks, each creature you control with power 4 or greater gets +1/+1 and gains trample until the end of turn.
I mean...
It's a barrel, right?
It's definitely a bear. I mean, it's not a bear. It's a 4-mana 4-3. That's not bear stats.
I don't know. On the art, I see a bear. So, I guess they're going for a bear.
Also, yeah, good job in making a legendary bear before a legendary worm in a regular set. I'm just saying.
On the bright side, your worm is better than this guy, so...
It is.
You know maybe. What's the funniest thing about this guy? He does nothing for the bear tribal.
He does absolute nothing. It's a 4 power tribal.
Yep. But for, you know, big, dumb creature strategies, this guy's real good.
He is.
However, did he have to be a bear and not care about bears?
I don't see a problem with that.
I don't care. I'm just nitpicking, basically.
But yeah, hey, there's a legendary bear out there.
Yay. What next do you want to talk about?
A card I'm excited about is Issareth, the Awakener.
Ah, the Battle Asha.
Yeah. So, Issareth, the Awakener is 1W for a 3-3 legendary creature human wizard with death touch. Whenever it attacks, you may pay X. When you do, return target creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield with a corpse counter on it. If that creature would leave the battlefield, exile it instead of putting it anywhere else.
This is good.
This is good.
I'm just seeing a lot of people making comparisons to Alesha. I'm like, no, different decks, really different decks.
Yeah, I'm not even considering it for Commander. I'm actually wanting to try it in Modern.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I mean, I'm completely new to the whole Death and Taxes and Eldrazi and Taxes. But I do see a use of this because all of your creatures are like 1, 2, or 3 mana. You violin Issareth and then she attacks and gets you like free stuff.
Hmm.
You can even get back, the facehugger thing that blinks things.
Flicker Wisp.
Flicker Wisp and flicker her out of combat.
I guess.
if they're blocking with, I don't know.
But what. I think that Death and Taxes lists are already too stacked, you know, to put something like this in.
Well, that's the same thing they said about Tron.
Sure. But commander-wise, don't compare this to Alesha, because Alesha decks usually tend to go a bit more taxing, because you're playing a bunch of, you know, two power guys. Well, this you can do the usual mono-black stupid big mana strategy.
Mm-hmm. But then again, do we have something else worth mentioning in these colored cards? I don't think so.
Just give me like a minute to go through all of this, but I don't think so.
So we can...
Reclamation Sage is back.
Oh yeah, that's... Yeah, nice reprint.
That's a legit good reprint.
It is.
I need to get actually a couple more. Oh, and Colossal Dreadmaw is getting back.
Mm-hmm.
For all you people who were afraid that there's going to be a block without it. We're not, it's here.
Also, this Elvish Rejuvenator thing.
What is it?
So it's a 2 and a green for a 1-1 Elf Druid. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them onto the battlefield tapped, and the rest on the bottom.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Oh yeah, one more thing. Elvish Chancellor, Clan Caller. For a green-green, it's a 1-1 Elf Druid. Other elves you control get +1/+1. And a 4 green green tap, search your library for a card named Elvish Clan Caller, put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
I think the main part is that it's an Elf Lord.
It's a 2-mana Elf Lord, that's the best part.
And that's quite cool.
And sometimes it gets, you know, more Elf Lords, but just focus on, you know, having this out and smashing people. But Nyxia, wanna talk some Elder Dragons?
Sure. Yeah, let's do this.
Let's talk about the good one first.
So... Nicol Bolas, the Ravager. Yes,
that one. Okay, I was afraid you were going to say something else.
For 1 and Grixis, so 4 mana, 4/4, flying, it's a creature. legendary. When Nicol Bolas the Ravager enters the battlefield, each opponent discards a card.
Already good.
For 4 and Grixis, you exile Nicol Bolas the Ravager, then return him to the battlefield transformed under his owner's control. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. And then he becomes Igor.
Nicol Bolas the Arisen. 7 loyalty. Legendary Planeswalker Bolas, +2. Draw 2 cards. Already really good. -3, Nicol Bolas the Arisen deals 10 damage to target creature or planeswalker. So, no more planeswalkers, I guess. -4, put target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. -12, exile all but the bottom card of target player's library.
No, that one's funny.
Yeah, you thought Jace was really strong, the mind sculptor. Nah, this is a bit stronger.
Yeah, he's decent. The biggest downside I see on Nicol Bolas is that he's stuck on a 4/4 flyer with a sorcery speed flip effect.
Yep. AKA he's balanced as all heck.
I mean, if you really want to invest this mana, I would suggest that you still play the old Nicol Bolas Planeswalker because he's still the best Nicol Bolas there is.
Actually, do you mean the creature or?
No, Nicol Bolas Planeswalker.
Ah, maybe you should add 1 more mana in that case.
Yeah, I mean, but you get an actual Planeswalker.
Because paying 7 mana for, you know, Nicol Bolas Planeswalker doesn't usually end up as well as you might like to.
I tried.
I know. But if you want to have a deck filled with Nicol Bolases and all the effects that Nicol Bolas usually does, this is a really good commander for that.
Yep.
But yeah, you can fill your deck with all the Nicol Bolas and all his minions and all the discard spells.
What do you mean all his minions? Everyone's a minion of Nicol Bolas.
Basically.
Except for Tetsumo Umezawa.
So what you're saying, Nicol Bolas is Alpharius?
Yes.
Good.
So yeah, his effects are really strong. Drawing 2 cards is good. Overkilling something is good. It's always good.
Getting stuff is good.
Getting stuff back for free is good.
And if you can actually pull that ultimate off, hats off to you.
It's such a... Oh, wait. Oh. Kaladesh doesn't rotate out yet.
It rotates out when?
When Ravnica comes.
Oh.
So you can have Nicol Bolas the Arisen enter with 11 counters because of that Dark Intimations.
Oh, God.
But you still don't get to ultimate.
Of course. I think they were thinking about those things.
But, if you're playing 5-color Bolas control, you can put those counters and you can have Oath of Teferi.
Sure, why not?
There you go. Instant, -12. And he survives.
In case you really need to win the game a bit more.
I mean, in case you didn't get Vraska's Contempted in response or, you know, actual any removal in the format in response, except for Cast Down.
Which you most likely did.
I mean, maybe you saved up 10 mana so you can negate that removal. Then, yeah. But I think that Nicol Bolas Ravager, so for 4 mana, 4/4 flyer that discards a card is good on itself.
It is.
So if they waste a removal, that's a 2-for-1, and that's really nice. And, you know, when you drain his hand dry, then you can just win by transforming.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, if you didn't win by, you know, attacking with Nicol Bolas, a 4/4 flyer.
Something has gone terribly wrong.
So yeah, it's one of those cards that will probably make Grixis control a thing, but we'll see.
Let's go from the really good Nicol Bolas to something that's less good, and then to the bottom. What do you say about that?
Sure.
So, Bevictus Asmadi, the Dire. 3 and a Jund for a 6/6 Elder Dragon. Flying, and whenever he attacks, for each player choose target permanent that player controls. That player sacrifices those permanents. Each player who sacrifices a permanent this way reveals the top card of their library, then puts it onto the battlefield if it's a permanent card. This is a bit random, which is red, and it removes stuff which is black and green. And this is not a bad ability.
It's not. It's actually a really interesting build around me ability, because it it really rewards you for having, like, the spinning thing. Sensei's divining top, yeah.
Yeah.
The spinning thing, my god.
The spinning thing, yes. It's called top hat, by the way.
So yeah, you have a top and this guy's really cool. Like, in a big guy tribal deck with token producers, you just sacrifice your tokens to get things. And most of the time, if players have really huge threats, a random card from the top is better for you than their big threat on the board.
Honestly, you don't even need to have him as a commander. You can just put him in a crash deck.
Yeah.
So I choose this huge creature, and this huge creature, and this my huge creature, and this guy. And they all die. Oh, look, crash is now 15-15, or even more.
Probably more.
Yeah. So that's actually not a bad synergy for that type of deck.
It's a really cool addition for the 99, but as a commander, I think it needs too much to work.
You really need to break it somehow.
Yeah. Like, you have to play John the Lantern Control.
I mean, we already have Circu as Lantern Control, might as well have this.
Oh! No, wait, no. That doesn't work. I thought, you know, Chimney inputs cards from your hand. So, yeah, no, Chimney Imp is still a bad card.
Surprise. So, which of the two disappointments do you want to talk about first?
Let's make a sandwich. Let's talk about the biggest disappointment, and then the... So, I guess it's my turn to
Read the third.
Palladia Mors, the Ruiner.
Oh, it's definitely ruined. It's definitely ruined.
It'll all ruin things. So it's 3 and a Naya for a 6/6 Flying Vigilance Trample, Elder Dragon. Palladia Mors, the Ruiner, has hexproof if it hasn't dealt damage yet.
When I read it in the morning, I thought I was, it was until the end of turn, you know, it loses hexproof. I was like, sweet, this is nice. And then Nixia said, it's bad because of this, and I'm like, oh no, it stays like that, doesn't it?
So, I just don't see this card playable anywhere.
I mean,
except for limited.
If you have Conjurer's Closet, it could work.
But why?
Because people are building bad decks, so might as well build this.
I mean, you know, if it had hexproof and indestructible, if it hasn't dealt damage yet, I could see a reason to play it, because it's actually like, you can't get rid of it.
It's a bit thick.
And, I mean, yeah, sure, it looks like a Voltron commander, but, you know, there are better Voltron commanders, like Uriel is like...
Yep, in the same colors.
In the same colors, and is an actual Voltron commander. And if you're playing it just because it's an Elder Dragon, then, I don't know, play the original Palladia Mors. You'll be more cool. So, let's say this is a public service announcement from us here at the Elder Dragon Turtle Podcast, talking about Elder Dragons and why you should not play them. So, just, I mean, you will have an idea of, like, oh yeah, this is going to be cool. I can just put on a bunch of equipment and a bunch of enchantments on Palladia Mors, not attack her. Oh, mind you, you can't block with it either, because then it deals damage. So it has to remain hidden forever, and then you can alpha strike people. Now, that does sound exciting. That does sound cool. And it's especially cool when you do it with with an Elder Dragon. It's just that, you know, a dragon that says the most vicious of her kin in the flavor text, this is an awfully cowardly creature.
So what Nixia's trying to say, that it's really, really not nice this time at Magical Christmas Land. You need to wait a bit till the weather gets cooler.
I mean, it's a card that's hard countered by Rakdos Charm.
Oh my god.
Because Rakdos Charm forces your creatures to deal damage to you, and then Palladia Mors loses hexproof.
Wow. But like you said, Nixia, limited, you play this. This is a bomb.
Oh, this is a game-winning limited bomb. It's like, there's no denying that.
Flying Vigilance Temple, you most likely don't have removal, die.
I mean, at one point, at like one instance, it's better than Ojutai.
Yep.
But once it deals that damage, if you didn't win, well, it becomes a lot less better than Ojutai.
Yeah, but unlimited removal is a bit iffy, so...
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, this isn't even standard playable. I mean...
Yeah.
There's Carnage Tyrant. I mean, sure, he doesn't have flying, but he can't be countered as well. And he has actual hexproof, not this bullshit. And this dragon isn't even good in the 99 of, I don't know, Mael the Anima.
Want to talk about some silly dragons instead of this one? Because this one is sad.
Sure, let's go on.
So, Chromium the Mutable. For 4 and Esper, it's a 7-7. Legendary creature, Old Dragon. It has Flash. This spell can be countered. It has Flying. Oh my god, all these abilities. What's gonna happen now? Discard a card. Until the end of turn, Chromium the Mutable becomes a 1-1. Becomes a human with base power and toughness 1-1. Loses all abilities and gains Hexproof. It can be blocked this turn. Invisible Stalker is back, people, and he just costs 7 mana.
Wow! A 7 mana Invisible Stalker. Wow.
Still.
Okay. But it's not a spirit.
It's not a... No, neither was the Stalker. He was a human.
Oh, he was just a human. Oh, that's right. Huh.
But yeah, Chromium is here.
Hey, points, where points are due... It doesn't do anything artifact related.
Yes.
In an Esper color commander.
It doesn't even do any control.
It also doesn't do anything else.
It's a really cute card.
I mean, it's adorable. It transforms into a human. I mean, I don't know the lore behind the more intricate lore behind the Elder Dragons, but I'm pretty sure this is like spot on lore wise.
The best thing is when Chromium the Mutable becomes Bob from accounting.
Wow, okay.
Bob, did you see the huge dragon that's flying over? Oh no, I was just taking a toilet. Ah, of course, that sounds like Bob. Stupid Bob.
Typical Bob.
Typical Bob.
But I'm going to say this. This is by far the best Esper reanimation commander there is.
Yep.
Free discard outlet?
Check.
Sure. It has flash and can't be countered. Instantly better than Palladia Morris. Let's just say that.
It says many things on this card, and there's strictly an upgrade from Palladia Morris.
So, flash and can't be countered is really cool. I mean, you can, like, technically build this as a Voltron commander, but I would highly suggest against that.
Honestly, better than Palladia Morris.
Yeah, because they see it coming, but they don't see it coming, if that makes sense.
Basically, Bob comes in and smacks you in the face.
No. A big dragon comes and wants to smack you in the face, and then Bob hits you.
Bob shows up in a suit and a tie and a bit, you know, sweat in his, on his brow, wearing, like, axes and jitters and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, Bob, where did you find this? What the hell? Why are you hitting me?
So suddenly, here comes Bob with 5 swords.
Bob
don't ask.
Comes with a vengeance.
Just don't ask. So yeah, it's a really funny idea to kill somebody with a 1-1 creature with commander damage nonetheless. But I really see this as an actual, you know, reanimation commander. And I might as well just do it just to spite people. That think this is a bad commander card, which realistically, I mean, there are worse cards.
Palladimors.
But there are a lot of cards that are better than Chromium.
Not
so...
Palladimors.
Sure. I mean, wow. I mean, Chromium is actually like standard playable because in Esper control, it's a finisher.
It's a 7-7 that flashes in.
Yeah.
It flashes, it flies, it can be countered, and the rest of the deck doesn't matter.
And if they try to kill it, well, guess what? Bob is back. Yeah. You can't kill Bob. Bob doesn't care about your shenanigans. Vraska's contempt? Yeah. Sure, he'll stare right down Vraska's eyes. He doesn't care.
Unless you try to remove him and then, what's the name of the guy? 3 mana when he comes into play. Unless the Horsey shows up. Horsey can fuck him up.
Mm-hmm.
Plague Mare for 1 black. It's a 2-2 horse. Nightmare horse. He can be blocked by white creatures, and when he comes into play, creatures your opponent's control get -1/-1 until the end of turn. So basically, if you try to kill Bob and then he, you know, becomes Bob, But then a horsey shows up, he's really afraid of horses.
Like, it's his only weakness.
Yeah. He's okay against goblins that do similar things, but, you know, horses, fuck those shits.
Horses are spoopy.
Horses are spoopy. Anything else left we need to talk about?
Actually, two more things.
Oh.
So Mistcaller is an actually interesting card.
Yeah.
Mistcaller is a 1 blue, 1/1 merfolk wizard. You can sacrifice it, and until end of turn, if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead.
So, I heard you all people wanted to play some auto-druids.
No.
How about you know? No, it's basically good against auto-druids, is what I'm saying.
It is quite good against auto-druids. It's also a merfolk.
Mm-hmm. This might actually maybe boost merfolk bit in Vintage.
I guess. I really couldn't tell.
I know you couldn't.
And one more card. It's a colorless card. It's a creature card. It's a 3/3. And you know how much it costs?
Million.
It costs exactly 7 mana.
Exactly million, yes.
Exactly 7. So Meteor Golem is a 7 mana 3/3 artifact creature golem. Wow, really? When Meteor Golem enters the battlefield, destroy target non-land permanent and opponent controls.
If you're playing mono red or mono black and you want some enchantment removal.
I mean, it really could have just said, you know, destroy target permanent. I really don't see a reason for this non-land permanent nonsense.
For 7 mana, yeah, it could have. Unless,
I mean,
you know,
unless you can drop him turn 3, then it's a problem.
Ha ha ha.
Hmm.
I have the conspiracy theories.
And it's also Meteor. I mean, Meteor Shower, you know, it destroys specifically lands. I mean, come on, wizards. Please.
You're really grasping for the straws.
Also, I'm really looking forward to the Ugin flip planeswalker.
Eugene.
Because, you know, suddenly he's like Bolas's
twin for some reason.
They were born from the same egg, and Bolas doesn't remember him.
Of course he doesn't.
I mean, I really don't see a reason for this retcon. I don't care about this retcon. I'll just remember the good old days when, you know, Nicol Bolas wasn't just inherently evil and Ugin wasn't just inherently good.
Yep.
I saw them both as assholes because they're all-powerful planeswalkers and, you know, all-powerful planeswalkers look at everyone as lower beings.
That happens after, you know, a couple of millennia of walking on, around the planes.
And if Ugin is just inherently good and does good, he's a bad character then. He's just a really bad character.
Are you trying to tell me that magic can portray characters really shittily?
They didn't used to.
Didn't used to, but now we have, you know, what we have.
And if Nicol Bolas is like evil just to be evil, I mean, okay. Do you do your thing, I'll just, you know, play the cards, I guess.
You know that I have been doing that lately, for the last couple of years.
What part?
Just playing the game, enjoying the game for what it is, and kind of ignoring the whole more detailed plot.
I mean, they do this so much. They make like 1 step forward, 2 steps back. I mean, when will they just move forward? It's really not that hard. I really don't think it's this hard.
Dominaria's story was really good, mostly when planeswalkers weren't around. By planeswalkers, I mean Gatewatch, let's face it.
Yeah, and the Gatewatch was pretty much useless.
Because when Teferi was around, it was a really cool story.
I mean, Muldrotha basically saved everyone, not like any planeswalker.
Yep.
Because turns out an uncommon legendary is the biggest threat in the multiverse.
Isn't Muldrotha rare?
No, I'm talking about the Hollow one.
The Hollow what?
I can't remember that Spectre, that 6 mana 4/4 Hollow guy.
That guy that discards things.
Yeah, turns out that planeswalkers can't harm him, but Muldrotha can. And Muldrotha was summoned by Slimefoot, which makes Slimefoot the most powerful being in the multiverse.
Surprise, surprise.
Sentient Mold was bigger help than the planeswalkers. Okay, sure.
Yep.
Sure, okay. So, this is what we got.
so far, set seems to be cool.
Yeah, it has. I'm looking forward to more reprints. I mean, half the set will be reprints.
That's good.
And I'm hoping to see more new cards that aren't built for limited.
And for Eugene.
And we've been actually at this for quite a bit, so I guess our retro review of Ravnica will have to wait for another episode.
I mean, either that or we can just, you know, record tomorrow and splice it all into one episode.
Yeah, maybe do a double event this week or something like that.
Yeah, if you wanna, we can actually do it easily.
I'll see, but probably like
next week
or Thursday or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
But we'll keep in touch about that. And for the rest of you glorious people, you can find all our information in the show notes. And as always, this has been Niksha, together with Igor.
Hello.
And this has been episode 74?
Possibly the first part of episode 74. We are quite unsure right now.
Let's call it 74A.
But if you keep hearing our voices after the, you know, this part, that means we have recorded more. If you do not, however, hear the outro music, the episode is over. And as
Still, I think that we will be like two episodes. But we'll see. You were saying?
Well, as always, the Emperor protects.
Hoorah.